They travelled at night to avoid the heat of the desert day. With Shasa sound asleep in the wagon cot, lulled by the motion of rolling wheels, Santan rode stirrup to stirrup with Lothar. His hair shone in the moonlight, and the shadows softened the marks of hardship and suffering on his features, so she found it difficult to take her eyes from his face. Each morning before the dawn, they went into Laga. If they were between waterholes, they watered the cattle and the horses from the bucket before they sought the shade of the wagon awnings to wait out the heat of the day. In the late afternoon, while the servants packed up the camp and inspanned for the night's trek, Lothar would ride out to hunt. At first, Santan rode with him, for she could not bear to be parted from him for even an hour. Then one evening in failing light, Lothar made a poor shot, and the Mauser bullet ripped through the belly of a beautiful little springbok. It ran before the horses with amazing stamina, a tangle of entrails swinging from the gaping wound. Even when at last it went down, it lifted its head to watch Lothar as he dismounted and unsheathed his hunting knife. After that, Santan stayed in camp when Lothar went out for fresh meat. So Santan was alone this evening when the wind came suddenly out of the north, niggling and chill. Santan climbed up into the living wagon to fetch a warm jacket for Shasa. The interior of the wagon was crammed with gear, packed and ready for the night's trek. The carpet bag, which contained all the clothing that Anna had provided, was stowed at the rear, and she had to scramble over a yellow wood chest to reach it. Her long skirts hampered her, and she teetered on the top of the chest and put out her hand to steady herself. Her nearest handhold was the brass handle on the front of Lothar's travelling bureau, which was lashed to the wagon bed. As she put her weight on it, the handle gave slightly, and the drawer slid open an inch. "He has forgotten to lock it," she thought. "I must warn him." She pushed the drawer closed and crawled over the chest, reached the stowed carpet bag, pulled out Shasa's jacket, and was crawling back when her eye fell again on the drawer of the bureau, and she checked herself sharply and stared at it. Temptation was like the prickle of a burr. Lothar's journal was in that drawer. "What an awful thing to do," she told herself primly, and yet her hand went out and touched the brass handle again. "What has he written about me?" She pulled the drawer open slowly and stared at the thick leather-bound volume. "Do I really want to know?" She began to close the drawer again and then capitulated to that overwhelming temptation. "I'll only read about me," she promised herself. She crawled quickly to the wagon flap and peered out guiltily. Swart Hendrik was bringing up the draft oxen, preparing to inspanning. "Has the master returned yet?" she called to him.
"No, missus. We have had no shots. He will be late tonight."
"Call me if you see him coming," she ordered, and crept back to the bureau. She squatted beside it with a heavy journal in her lap, and she was relieved to find it was written almost entirely in Afrikaans, with only occasional passages in German. She rifled through the pages until she found the date on which he had rescued her. The entry was 4 pages long, the longest single entry in the entire journal. Lothar had given a full account of the lion attack and the rescue, of their return to the wagons while she was unconscious, and a description of Shasa. She smiled as she read. "A sturdy lad, of the same age as Manfred, when last I saw him, and I find myself much affected." Still smiling, she scanned the page for a description of herself, and her eyes stopped at the paragraph. "I have no doubt that this is indeed the woman, though she is changed from the photograph and from my brief memory of her. Her hair is thick and fuzzy as that of a Nama girl, her face thin and brown as a monkey." Santan gasped with affront. Yet when she opened her eyes for a moment,
I thought my heart might crack. They were so big and soft.
She was slightly mollified and skimmed forward, turning the pages quickly, listening like a thief for the sound of Lothar's voice. A word caught her eye in the neat blocks of Teutonic script.
Busmanna.
Her attention flicked to it.
Bushman.
And her heart tripped, her interest entirely captivated.
Bushmen harassing the camp during the night. Hendrik discovered their spoor near the horse lines and the cattle. We followed at first light. A difficult hunt.
The word Yach stopped Santan's eye.
Hunt? She puzzled.
This was a word only applied to the chase, to the killing of animals.
And she raced on.
We came up with the two bushmen, but they almost gave us the slip by climbing the cliff with the agility of baboons. We could not follow and would have lost them, but their curiosity was too strong. Again, just like baboons. One of them paused at the top of the cliff and looked down at us. It was a difficult shot, at extreme upward deflection and long range. The blood drained from Santan's face. She could not believe what she was reading. Each word reverberated in her skull, as though it were an empty place, cavernous and echoing. However, I held through and brought the bushman down. Then I witnessed a remarkable incident. I had no need of a second shot, for the remaining bushman fell from the cliff top. From below, it seemed almost as though he threw himself over the edge. However, I do not believe that this was the case. An animal is not capable of suicide. It is more likely that in terror and panic he lost his footing. Both bodies fell in difficult positions. However, I was determined to examine them. The climb was awkward and dangerous, but I was in fact well rewarded for my endeavors. The first body, that of a very old man, the one that had slipped from the cliff, was unremarkable, except that he carried a clasp knife made by Joseph Rogers of Sheffield on a lanyard about his waist. Santan began to shake her head from side to side.
No,
she whispered.
No.
This, I believe, must have been stolen from some other traveller. The old rogue probably entered our camp in the hope of similar booty. Santan saw again little Owa squatting naked in the sunlight, with a knife in his hands, and the tears of pleasure running down his withered cheeks.
Oh, in the name of mercy, no,
she whimpered, but her eye was drawn remorselessly on by the orderly ranks of brutal words. The second body, however, yielded the greater trophy. It was that of a woman. If anything, she was more aged than the man, but around her neck she wore a most unusual decoration. The book slid from Santan's lap, and she covered her face with both hands.
Hani,
she cried out in the San tongue.
My old grandmother, my old and revered grandmother, you came to us, and they shot you down.
She was rocking from side to side, humming in her throat the San attitude of grief. Suddenly, she hurled herself at the bureau. She pulled the drawer from its runners, scattering loose pages of writing paper and pens and sticks of wax on the floor of the wagon.
The necklace, she sobbed. The necklace, I have to be certain.
She seized the handle of one of the small lower compartments and tugged at it. It was locked. She snatched the handle of the wagon jack from its slot in the frame, and with the steel point shattered the lock and jerked the compartment open. It contained a silver-framed photograph of a plump blonde woman with a child in her lap and a wad of letters tied up with a silk ribbon. She spilled them onto the floor and smashed open the next compartment. There was a Luger pistol in a wooden holster and a packet of ammunition. She threw them on top of the letters, and at the bottom of the compartment she found a cigar box. She lifted the lid. It contained a bundle wrapped in a patterned bandana, and as she picked it out with shaking hands, Harney's necklace tumbled from the roll of cloth. She stared at it as though it was a deadly mamba, holding her hands behind her back and blubbering softly.
Honey, oh, my old grandmother.
She brought her hands to her mouth and pressed her lips to stop them quivering. Then she reached out slowly for the necklace and held it up, but at the full stretch of her arms.
He murdered you, she whispered,
and then gagged as she saw the black stains of blood still upon the gory stones.
He shot you down like an enemy.
She hugged the necklace to her breast and began to hum and rock herself again, her eyes tightly closed to dam back her tears. She was still sitting like that when she heard the drum of hooves and the shouts of the servants welcoming Lothar back to the wagons. She stood up and swayed on her feet as an attack of giddiness seized her. Her grief was like an affliction. But then, when she heard his voice,
"Yeah, Indrek, take my horse. Where is the missus?"
her grief changed shape, and though her hand still shook, her chin lifted, and her eyes burned hot with tears, but with a consuming rage. She snatched up the Luger pistol and drew it from its curved wooden holster. She snapped back the slide and watched a shiny brass cartridge feed up into the chamber. Then she dropped it into the pocket of her skirt and turned to the wagon flap. As she jumped down, Lothar was coming towards her, and his face brightened with pleasure at the sight of her.
Santen!
He paused as he saw her expression.
Santen, something is wrong.
She held out the necklace towards him, and it glittered and twinkled between her shaking fingers. She could not speak. His face darkened, and his eyes were hard and furious.
You have opened my bureau.
You killed her.
Who?
He was truly puzzled, and then,
oh, the bushwoman.
Hani.
I don't understand.
My little old grandmother.
He was alarmed now.
Something is very wrong. Let me...
He stepped towards her, but she backed away and screamed,
"Keep away! Don't touch me! Don't ever touch me again!"
She reached for the pistol in her skirt.
Santen, calm yourself!
And then he stopped as he saw the Luger in her hands.
Are you mad?
He gazed at her in amazement.
Here, give that to me. Again he stepped forward.
You murderer! You cold-blooded monster, you killed her!
And she held the pistol double-handed, the necklace entangled with a weapon, the barrel waving in erratic circles.
You killed my little Annie. I hate you for it.
Santen!
He put out his hand to take the pistol from her. There was a flash of gun smoke, and the Luger kicked upwards, flinging Santen's hands above her head. The shot cracked like a trek whip, numbing her eardrums. Lothar's body jerked backwards, and he spun on his heels. His long golden locks flickered like ripe wheat in a high wind as he collapsed onto his knees and then toppled forward onto his face. Santen dropped the Luger and fell back against the side of the wagon as Hendrik rushed forward and snatched the Luger out of her hand.
I hate you,
she panted at Lothar.
Die, damn you, die and go to hell.